Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
Good morning. It's 8:14 at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. I'm glad you're with us for Galesburg Live on this last day of February, this bonus day in February, February 29th. I'm Will Stevenson. Normally, the way it works out is that we're here every 4 weeks, the four of us that host this program, which usually works out to about once a month, but happen to be 5 Saturdays in February, even though there are 29 days. So that's why I'm here again, but that's okay. March is a busy month for us as well. I'll have the program in March one weekend, and of course the WGIL radio auction coming up next month as well. So lots of things going on in March, and lots of things always going on here on WGIL, and we appreciate you being a part of it. My guest in this second hour this morning is someone I think I've gotten to know reasonably well, or perhaps not well at all over the last year. I don't know. I just realized as he was adjusting his microphone, I forgot to tell him he was more than welcome to do that. But it's not like he's ever used one before. Scott Rasso is my guest. He works for the Galesburg School District. He is an actor. He is a first-time director. He teaches dance And quite frankly, Scott, I just find most of that fascinating. What can I say?
Stevenson and Rasso in the morning. I've been waiting to do that, Will.
I'm glad you said that, because I want you to listen real quickly to the reason why that reference was just made from a recent conversation on Galesburg's Evening News about a production that both Scott and I are involved in right now. Just listen to this for a second.
So what have you learned about yourself becoming a director?
Well, I've learned that my gut is usually right when it comes to making...
You could host a talk radio show by the way.
Well, that'd be fun. Stevenson and Rasso in the morning.
That's not what I said.
I'm not doing it without you, though.
Oh, fine.
So, yeah, I decided that I just had to pull the Band-Aid off Scott and have you in.
I'm glad you had that ready to go. That was great.
Yeah, you know, that's why they pay me the big bucks here.
Right.
You know, but again, thank you for coming in this morning. I know this is probably the last thing you would really want to do after a night being in a play.
No, this is absolutely, I mean, we have a logo, we have a jingle already. I've been looking forward to this.
We got to work on the jingle, though. If we're going to do this, it's got to be much better.
Got to commission somebody for it.
Yeah, that's right. So, that again inspired me to just say, fine, let's have you in here and let's get this done. And then I will guarantee you, by 9 o'clock, you will never want to do this again.
Oh, we'll see.
All right,
challenge accepted.
You work for District 205.
I do. Yes, I've been working for 205 for, let's see, this is my 16th year.
And you kind of made an interesting transition here at mid-year.
Yes. In December, I was promoted from I taught ESL, so English as a Second Language. And I'd been at every building except for Nielsen, actually. But I was currently at the time I was placed at Galesburg High School. And then the district posted a position for a coordinator of English as a Second Language the district program. So I applied for that and was appointed and promoted and moved over to the board office in January. And I've been doing that since the new year.
I was saying, we should have had Dr. Asplund just base you at Nielsen since that's the only building you haven't been in at this point.
Actually, I've been there quite a bit since January.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, that they've become quite the family to me as well. And every building in the district is terrific. And I feel very welcome there, and they're very, receptive to having me, and it's nice being able to collaborate across the district with wonderful professionals.
ESL seems like something that maybe we should have thought about maybe in the scale that it should be thought of in terms of being taught in schools well before. I mean, I imagine it's been in place in some form or another for a while, but maybe not to the degree it has been maybe in recent years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I taught PE, so I was at Lombard, and then I was at Churchill, and then after a few years of that, I kind of needed a transition myself, and my principal, actually, at the time, Bart Arthur, he discovered I was bilingual, and I had been working on my endorsement for ESL, because it's a separate teaching credential, mm-hmm. and he kind of pushed my name forward to the curriculum office and asked if I'd be willing to change over my career path? And I said, sure, absolutely. You know, and
what made you start thinking about that path?
Well, I had gotten my master's degree in as administration, mm-hmm. so to be a principal, and I had applied for a job, and I was declined the job. I was like the second or third choice,
but number one in our hearts.
Well, thank you. But I during that process, you know, of course, I could have. I stepped back and looked at it, you know, with a growth mindset, and I said, well, I didn't get this job for a reason. I'd like to find out why, you know, rather than just pointing fingers and blaming and saying that I was better than everybody and it should have been mine, like I was entitled to it. But like,
so you
I said,
think you're being told a purpose, and you in your life, like something's telling you a purpose, and,
right.
and you determine that maybe you misinterpreted that purpose.
Well, not sort of, but I wanted to know more information. Why wasn't I selected? Mm-hmm. You know, and so I did know one person on the team that selected the person for that job, and I asked him, and he was very candid. He said, "Wow, that's really cool of you to ask," and he just said, "You know, my resume wasn't as well rounded as it could have been, and I needed some more." I needed some more areas of expertise and some more experience. So that's when I decided to go get another endorsement. And at the time, this would have been like 2009 or 2010, the ESL population in our community was growing. I mean, it's always kind of been there with the heritage Spanish speakers that we've had in Galesburg for as long as I can remember and even before then. But that population was growing, and I noticed that. And I said, you know what, there's a need for this community. And I was bilingual. I mean, I'm not completely balanced bilingual, but I can speak Spanish well enough to have conversations and help kids in these cases. And I was a little misunderstood about that, because ESL is teaching English as a second language, not necessarily teaching Spanish, because if you have families that don't speak Spanish, for instance, like we have many African families coming, and a couple of them do speak Spanish because they're from, you know, Spanish colonies or what have you. But so I ended up starting my endorsement for teaching ESL, and that led to me getting transferred before I had completed that endorsement. And I've been doing that since 2012. It's been actually 8 years as of Valentine's Day. I got moved mid-year to do that. So if I take a transition, I want to do it mid-year. I don't want to make it easy and do it over the summer like every other educator.
Yeah, you wanted to take your winter break and pack up your classroom, as I saw you were saying on social media.
Yeah,
you're really looking forward to that.
I did. Well, it was a nice change, and our district has needed a position like that, and I'm grateful for the administration and the Board of Education for seeing that need and for making that move. It's the right thing to do.
As you've taught ESL, I imagine any teaching position, I think you probably have students that you can really see. You can really see those students come out and be much better people. I imagine that must be incredibly so in teaching ESL.
Yeah, as I mentioned earlier, this is my 16th year teaching, so I've got students now that I had in sixth grade who are, you know, 30 years old now, right?
Wow.
Or getting there, I should say. And then I've got, you know, some kids that I had when they were in kindergarten that are now in high school. And I've got former students who have become friends that I, you know, that I'm proud to have in my social circle,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's just, it's really kind of neat, being vested in the community and seeing, you know, the results and of those relationships and the influence that I've had.
It's fantastic.
Over the years, yeah, certainly.
That's great. Scott Rasso is our guest this morning, mostly because he insisted upon being here. It's not true, not entirely true, talk about hearing a different career path. I hope Dr. Asplund isn't listening, since he just hired you to this fancy new district job, and now you're having an on-air audition to be a broadcaster.
Oh, geez. Is that what this is?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not. We don't need any more broadcasters. I'm kidding. All right, it's 8:23. We'll talk with Scott more next. I have a feeling I'm going to continue to dig myself a hole in this hour of Galesburg Live on WGIL.
News, talk, sports on 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL.
It's 8:25 at WGIL. Galesburg Live continues. Thanks for joining us this morning. I'm Will Stevenson. Galesburg's evening news, weeknights at 5 o'clock, is normally my thing. appreciate you listening to that. Monday night at 5, Cameron Line will be filling in for me, and we'll talk to a instructor at Carl Sandburg College who will also be having a performance later in the week at Sandburg. So that'll be coming up Monday. So I thank you in advance for listening to our other programs here, just like this one. Scott Rasso is my guest this hour. We've been talking about how he is in charge of the ESL program in District 205, a role he just recently moved into, which I think is a fantastic thing that the district and Scott are doing for our community. But speaking of fantastic things Scott does for the community, you're an actor, and that's how I first met you. I was looking once upon a time, more than a year ago, looking for something to do with spare time that I quickly found out I didn't have, and got in touch with Prairie Players and got baptismed by fire in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything about running the lights. I didn't know anything about running the sound. And somehow now I've done four or five plays since then.
You've become quite the techie, Will.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's when you first approached me, when you were in Joseph, you were Pharaoh, which I think was really the role, one of the roles you were born to play.
Yeah, that's a role that's certainly at the top of my bucket list. I'm glad I got the chance to do it.
No, it was fantastic. That production was just amazing to see. And I hadn't really done much in theater, and I hadn't really stepped foot, except for a couple of times in a theater, since my senior year high school class play. And I knew that I could probably run some of the equipment, and I knew about sound, obviously. If I didn't, I probably wouldn't be doing this job. Like some people who don't know about sound, they end up doing podcasts. But that's another discussion. And I just wanted to help, and that's kind of how I got hooked up, and now here I am, and now I almost know how the lights work in the theater.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here looking at the board you're operating right now. My mind is blown away.
90% of this I don't need at any given time, but this is easy. They make control boards that are much more complicated and with flashing lights and things like this now that I'm sure that I would probably be overwhelmed by. But what got you interested in theater?
Well, to be honest, it was a girl.
Ha ha! I knew it.
Yep, that's the story of my life.
Yeah.
But senior year of high school, I had a girlfriend who West Side Story was, we were going to do West Side Story at United Township where I went in East Moline.
Yeah.
And she wanted to audition, and I was a football player and a baseball player, and I had been dancing my entire life up to that point, but just I think that's what made me a decent lineman, because I'm not the biggest guy, but I had really good footwork. But doing theater never really crossed my mind. My younger sister and my younger brother had done some things, in their schools, and it was always fun to watch. But I finally had the chance to do it. My girlfriend, senior year, asked me, she batted those eyes, and Scott, will you audition for West Side Story with me? Sure, I'll do it. And it was a blast. I'm really glad I did it. And that would have been 1995.
Wow, that's
November 95.
That's 25 years ago, almost.
Yeah. So then, and then the show we did it January 96, right at the end of that. So it's been 20 plus years.
How many plays have you been in since then?
Well, it's probably in the team, probably 15 or so. I took some time off when my kids were little, and as a teacher and just as I coached football, and I didn't have a whole lot of time to do that. But my son, Raphael, over here, do you want to say hi?
Hi.
Oh, wait, I better give Raphael the microphone, though. Say hi, Raphael.
Hi.
And he's in a couple of productions right now, too, including one that's being performed twice today with the Performing Arts Academy.
Yeah, they're performing over at Costa here at 10:30 and then at 12:30, I believe. So go on over, take some canned foods to donate, and get a discounted ticket.
He's practicing right now by playing a Nintendo Switch, I noticed. Yeah. But anyway.
Yeah, so I think it's been 15 shows there. Wrong mic.
Sorry, I hit the wrong mic. I'm sorry about that. He's been in how many?
I think it's been around 15 or 16
crazy.
Shows. And those are mostly performing, like in the cast. I've been on crew for a couple.
Yeah.
I've I've been really active the last few years here, Raphael, especially since he's gotten into theater. I didn't force him into it, you know, but he did. Like we started listening to Hamilton a few years ago when that was really popular, and then an opportunity came to perform a sing along.
Yeah,
with Sugar High Theatricals.
Oh,
so
uh-huh.
Yeah, so Raphael and I jumped into that, and he really kind of got bit by the acting bug, and he's been in Footloose at Galesburg High School a couple years ago. He did Shrek at A-Town last year, and then we both did Shrek with the Community Play Project in the fall. So I think with my kids becoming more active in theater, I became active in theater again. And it's been wonderful because now I get to share that with him.
Well, you had to imagine that if he's seen Dad in a few performances that he might want to try it himself.
Well, he didn't actually.
Really?
I talked about it and I've showed him pictures, but it was not really a thing. He's seen me ballroom dancing, which is another thing I do. He's seen that several times, and maybe I'm sure they're related somehow because they're performing arts, right?
Oh, sure. Well, let's take a break there and talk more about all of this, and then maybe, just maybe, I will consent to something that Scott threatened he was going to do during the course of this hour. Maybe.
Yes.
If he's good.
He's good.
Scott Rasso is with me in this hour of Galesburg Live. It's 8:32. Cameron Linus, WGIL News Headlines, and then we'll be back with more of our conversation this morning on WGIL. Good morning.
Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Will Stevenson.
It's 8:36 at 93.7 FM and 1400 AM WGIL. This is Galesburg Live. I'm glad you're with us this morning. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Will Stevenson. My guest this hour is Scott Rasso. We talked about Scott being in charge of the ESL programs in District 205, the Galesburg School District. We've been talking here about him being an actor and being involved in community theater for these many years, something I'm still relatively new in, but having a great time being involved for sure. You made the transition just right here very recently to director.
Yes, I'm a director now, apparently.
Your first performance is The Who's Tommy, which has been this past weekend and this weekend at Prairie Players Civic Theater. You can go to WGIL.com on the community events page to find the listing and get tickets and whatnot. Before I ask you about the broader scope of it, we've pretty much had sold out shows the entire time.
We have. I think the opening night there were a few empty seats, 5 or 6 I counted at the end of the show.
That's got to be though pretty darn gratifying for your first time out to have that kind of turnout.
Yes, it's very. I mean, as a performer, you like having a full house.
Yeah,
it's just you it gets you psyched up. You get to. You know, that you can feel, I mean, you bring an energy to the show and then the crowd kind of gives you back that energy. And with this show, it's not applause after every song. It's not cheering and whooping. A lot of times the audience is grunting and groaning and sitting uncomfortably and shifting to one side because of the content, right? And then we don't even give them time between songs. There's a music notation called Ataka, which I learned from Bob Fornander, our band director.
Mm-hmm.
But this word is written at the end of almost every song, and it means that the band will continuously play from the end of one song to the beginning of another. So first act is almost nonstop music.
Is it difficult to read the energy of a crowd, though, when there's not the opportunities to applaud or really react to a performance?
I also had to cast myself, so I play a couple of small roles in the show, too. Mm-hmm. So I do get to see the audience from the actor's perspective.
Well, you had to cast yourself in
the
show.
I couldn't put – you were running the lights. I couldn't put you in the
right.
Show.
You're right. And you can't afford me.
Yeah, that too. But I think just – You can tell if an audience is engaged just by how they're sitting and how they're reacting to you, even without the applause.
Yeah.
And you could feel the emotions. Like in one song they're uncomfortable. The next song they want to cry. The next song they're just ecstatic.
Which makes sense to me because other than hearing applause or hearing laughter or things like that from being high up in a booth well behind behind the audience, I just don't get that, but I'm also kind of in tune to trying to keep an eye on my script and where the next cue goes and things like that. So I guess I don't really see that maybe as much as you do. I mean, I think I saw it quite a bit in Joseph.
Yeah, certainly.
And certain other shows, but as you said, with the pacing of this show, that's, at least for me, that's kind of difficult to read.
Yeah, Joseph is a different type of rock opera in that the every song kind of represents a different genre, and they're all kind of meant to be fun and happy, and everybody claps at the end. Even the song where Joseph, you know, Joseph is quote unquote killed by his brothers, it still kind of has a happy, you know, ending to it because we're right, we're finally rid of him, you know, that guy. But yeah, with this show, it's a much different vibe, and it's certainly not for small children. Okay, it's
let's back up. Yeah, and let's talk a little bit more about that. In case you didn't hear our conversation on Galesburg's Evening News, I guess I didn't really have till I started following along and showing up to practices, mm-hmm. and trying to get a hold on what I needed to do in the show. I didn't really have a full understanding, I think, of the seriousness of at times. I mean, yeah. I don't want to use the word whimsical because that's not it, but I kind of knew about the sort of the some of the more grandiose parts of the story, but I didn't really have a full grasp of how serious this story really is.
Sure. Well, yeah, the rock opera, the album written by Pete Townshend, came out in 1969, and they had it's kind of a shell of a story. Mm-hmm. You know, the story wasn't as well fleshed out. And then there was a movie a few years later where they had to write a script and make all these things that they sang about in that psychedelic mod rock era, they had to make them visual. And then the Broadway show was further developed after the movie. I don't want to say from the movie because it's not a completely different story, but it takes what's bad in the movie and makes it good.
Yeah.
You know, at least as far as a storytelling perspective. But yeah, the content is really difficult. And I think part of the responsibility of any theater patron is to research what show it is you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And do your homework beforehand because it's not for children. We do depict scenes of domestic violence. We depict alcoholism, drug use, child molestation, abuse of all forms, neglect. What else is there? We have gun violence. We have a couple of shootings in the show. I mean, mm-hmm. so it's not, but it's told with music. So we do it in an artful and abstract way. So it's not to sensationalize these things, but they are issues that are present in the lives of children here in this community today. So that's another reason we're Prairie Players is partnering with the court-appointed special advocates of the region, and we have a representative in the lobby, and they are sharing information with the audience about child welfare and how to better advocate for children, and they've actually signed up some volunteers for that organization, which I'm really proud of that.
And by the way, since I'm nothing if not shameless, we did recently on Galesburg's Evening News talk to Sarah Robson of CASA because they are looking for more volunteers, so you can go back and listen to that conversation if you'd like on WGIL.com as
Absolutely.
Well. But that's fantastic that that's worked out like that. I'm gratified to hear that.
Yeah, well, with this show, this production has been very near to my heart for many years.
This is personal for you.
Yeah, very, very personal. And I wanted to give the audience a multi-sensory experience. So they're going to see things and feel things and hear things. You know, we do have D. Weber is doing ASL interpretation for every show.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I want to watch her the whole time because the way she, I mean, it's like watching.
She's really into it.
If you could watch music, that's what she does. I mean, she's just, it's beautiful watching her. And the fact that she's interpreting the music, you have to see it to believe it. You know, it
I
just
found
adds.
I almost missed a couple of like yous at times because I was just kind of looking off to my, looking off to stage right and seeing, seeing D there.
Yeah. So I try to appeal. I mean, I also have a very inclusive cast there as well. So mm-hmm. I cast all body types and all ability levels. And we have a cast member who is in a wheelchair for a lot of the show, Josh Burwell.
Mm-hmm.
He played Donkey in Shrek.
If
you saw that at Community Play Project last fall, but he auditioned and he loves rock music and wanted to be a part of it. So I said, yes, absolutely. And so I don't see any reason why we should have any barriers when it comes to community theater.
Did you get any blowback or concern about putting on this? And let me back up for a second. In my opinion, I think that there are times where it seems that some theater groups have a certain number of productions that they do and they constantly recycle them.
Okay.
So I was kind of glad to see something as different as Tommy being performed and as the serious the serious nature of that, obviously. But do you get blowback from people who are concerned about the seriousness of the material, and that you have younger people in the cast as well as people that have a better understanding of some of the situations?
Yeah, I think so. But if you look at what Prairie Players has done in the past few years, they did Cabaret, I think, a mm-hmm. couple years ago. And that's, yeah. that's I mean, there's a lot of issues with Cabaret.
Yeah.
Brighton Beach Memoirs was done last spring, you know, and there are some really intense conversations that revolve around teenage boys discovering themselves there.
Yes.
And so I think
that was more done in almost at times a comical sort of a way than maybe Tommy is.
Sort of. Yeah. Tommy is quite different. And when I did first propose it, I did have a lot of people asking, how are you going to do that? You know, because of the content of it. And when I did propose it, the board of direct, I proposed it to the play selection committee, and they forwarded it onto the board, and the board did call me into the meeting and kind of I had to give like a dissertation as to why I wanted to do this show. Yeah. And I did share that how personal it was to me and how I wanted to make it inclusive, and I wanted to make it meaningful, you know, and I wanted to involve area organizations and reach out and build bridges and build doors and windows to other agencies and make it a true community event. And I'm really pleased that it has become so. But there's always something in my mind that, you know, for instance, there's a song called Fiddle About, which I'm not going to describe. But in my mind, I said, how are we going to do this? Is it going to go over well with the audience? Part of that goes with, like, how I cast the show. And so the first person I cast was Raphael, my son, right over there. And he plays 10-year-old Tommy. And he gets the worst of this abuse and everything that I mentioned before. And it just came down to how am I going to portray it? And I was very adamant in the character of Uncle Ernie, who sings Fiddle About.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't feel comfortable auditioning for that. I asked one of my friends, Shannon McNally, I asked him if he'd play the part just because of the sensitivity of what was being portrayed.
Yeah.
And it's crucial that he and Raphael have a good relationship, and Raphael's comfortable with him. You know, he's friends with their kids and stuff too. So it was just, I mean, and even in rehearsals, it's I could just see it on Shannon's face, just the emotional toll it's taking on him. He's been just one of the unsung heroes of our show, just because he does that role so well, and he's just, it's emotional thinking about it.
The thing of it is I think that these are issues that are covered in this play that have affected a lot of us. They've affected you. They've affected me. They've affected a lot of people.
Certainly.
But I think it's, and as much as there have been inroads over the years to try and get more of a community conversation going about that, I think this does that, or at least it should do that.
I hope so. Yeah, I shared part of my story with the cast and the crew when you heard that.
Yeah.
And ever since then, I've had five or six of them come up and, you know, share with me their stories. And they wouldn't have done that if I hadn't done it first.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I'm not trying to say this to toot my own horn, but I'm saying that sharing with other people always yields you good results.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think they trust me more knowing my vision for and my why for doing the show and kind of putting everything out there that I've done. And I don't feel like there's anything left I can share with them. They have peaked, and they're using every bit of their abilities to make this a good performance. And I think it just added that last thing we needed for them to kind of put them over the edge of, I don't want to say they're great, but they're terrific.
What's been some of the feedback you've gotten from the audience so far?
Oh, it's been overwhelmingly positive and affirming. I've gotten several hugs, several thank yous. I've had people in the organization say they've never been prouder to put on such a production.
That's good.
We had, I invited the clients from KCCDD to our final dress, and we had 25 people there to watch the show, and I think that's a practice that Prairie Players is going to continue for final dress rehearsals.
They should,
because it's good to have an audience for that preview performance.
Mm-hmm.
Because for those of you that aren't theater people, we do a tech week leading up to that first performance, and you just add all of the different elements like lights and sound and costumes and hair and makeup and all the props and all the set, and everything has to come together. The puzzle has to form, and the last thing you need is an audience. And having a test audience is necessary before you open to the public. And I'm grateful that KCCDD could make that work. And I'd love to keep that going in the future.
Speaking of things I didn't have a great understanding of, man, Tech Week stresses me the heck out. And I don't really have that big of a role in the production. You have no idea how sour the look was on my face for at least the first 3 days of Tech Week, because I felt like I didn't understand what was going on.
And my
cues in the script were not marked in the way that I probably should have marked them. So right. Some of it was on me, but man, oh my gosh.
Well, and I know I was pretty demanding of all the technicians there. So thank you for that. And
that wasn't even a big deal. It's just like, I just had a real trouble wrapping my head around it. And I couldn't understand why. I guess I'm just used to like my everyday job, and right. I know what I have to do, and exactly. I can do it with my eyes closed. And man, that feeling of starting a new job really just maybe doesn't appeal to me as much as I thought it did.
Well, the frustrating thing about the Tech Week is that as the director, I've had the vision in my head the entire time.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I need you to have it. Why don't you have it yet?
Uh-huh.
And that's Tech Week is when everybody else starts to see the vision the way I see the vision. And actually, I almost bought a coffee mug that says, "I'm sorry for what I said during Tech Week," you know, because I can't say a lot of that stuff here on the air. But
no, you in fact, you can't say any of it on the air, we'd like to
bleep.
Yeah, we'd like to keep the lights on here for a while.
Exactly.
And if we have to take this place off the air, Will's out of a job.
We don't want to do that.
No, not at all. But no, it's been it's been stressful, but it's been fun, especially once we finally got to opening night.
Well, and I think part of that fun is because of the stress, because we had a task that we weren't sure we could do. You know, everybody was challenged and everybody was thinking, "Oh my gosh, this isn't going to happen." Mm-hmm. And then Tuesday got better, Wednesday was really good, Thursday was almost perfect for the mm-hmm. preview, and that's exactly when you want to peak. In fact, during the rehearsal process, I canceled, I think, 3 rehearsals because of the weather, but also mm-hmm. because we didn't need them. You know, we were ahead of schedule. We were where we needed to be. I didn't want to peak and get really good like Sunday, Monday before we opened, because then the performances would slack a little bit and backslide. And I didn't want that. So part of it is you have to, you know, the pieces all have to come together, but then everybody has to get really good at the right time. And we are there now.
All right. I have a couple of minutes left. I'm going to move our final break toward the end of the hour because Scott has to jet out of here early so Raphael can get to the Performing Arts Academy productions at Costa today.
10:30.
10:30 and afternoon, right?
10:30 and 12:30, I think.
All right. Yeah, very good.
Bring some canned foods.
You mentioned it earlier, kind of when you were talking about how you got cast and ended up getting talked into West Side Story was... You said you've been dancing and things like that for a while, and you've kind of that's almost your side hustle when you're not in plays.
Side hustle, yeah. Well, I'm semi-retired. I tell people.
I just used the word side hustle for the first time on the air. That's a very important moment in my life. But you go around. You've been teaching still some dance lessons. I know for the Parks and Rec Division and privately and in some other venues.
Yeah, I mentioned earlier that I'd been dancing pretty much my whole life, and my father put me into baile folclorico, which is the Mexican folk style dancing.
Oh, uh-huh.
I started that when I was 4 or 5 years old, so I've never known any different. And boys have always danced, and I think that's something that I'm glad to see coming back with more young men, becoming dancers.
I had to learn how to square dance in either kindergarten or first grade, and I'm not sure I could do it now, but I just remember being both terrified and almost embarrassed that I was doing this.
Dancing can be fun if it's taught well, and I it would have been 1998 or so a couple years after I was in West Side Story, I stumbled into a job opportunity to learn to be a ballroom dance teacher, and that's been over 20 years ago now, and I still do that a little bit, as you say. Side hustle. I teach for the city of Galesburg, and we have a program coming up here starting next Thursday. We're going to move out to the Lake Story Pavilion.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and we're going to do 6 weeks, and it's kind of we have a week, and then we're off one, and then we do two, and then we're off one. So it's kind of – the dates are kind of funky, but it's because of the, like, facility rentals and things like that. But it's going to be a wonderful – new location for us on a better night. I'm looking forward to that. And then I also teach on First Fridays. I teach out at Knox County Brewing Company. That's a separate thing, and that's kind of a drop-in class. You can come, and it's a $5 donation there, and you can we do a different dance each month, and they got terrific food and drinks out there. So it's nice. I'm glad there's so many opportunities for artistic things like that here in Galesburg.
What keeps you? You say you're semi-retired, but there's got to be something that keeps you doing that.
Well, I have a day job, Will. I'm an ESL program coordinator for our district. And
really, I hadn't heard that at any point before.
That's like my dream job right there. So I'm keeping my dream job because it's so much fun, and I love doing what I do, and I love the collaborating with colleagues that I have, and I love the professional learning that I get to do. I've learned so much about so many things. I could sit here for another hour and just talk about that, but
I'll let you if you'd like.
I gotta get this kid
Performing
Arts Academy. But
there you go.
Yeah, we do it another time, certainly.
That's good. Well, I'm glad you talked a little bit about that. My biggest fear is I'm socially awkward.
No.
I know you find that hard to believe.
Not you.
No, it's truer than you think. And I think I ruined a potential relationship once because I got onto a dance floor and I froze.
Oh, okay.
And I still freeze. And I just can't get over that. Like, I feel like I'm going to look like an idiot. And I can't move at all. Is there something I can do to get me out of that?
Next time I teach merengue, Will, I'm going to invite you to come.
Oh, my God,
I think. Well, no, I honestly, that's the one, that's the dance that when I got married, I had our wedding party, who, you know, a lot of them didn't know each other, right? Mm-hmm. We had our rehearsal dinner, and I taught them like a half an hour lesson, merengue, and then they danced an entire dance at our wedding the next day.
No kidding.
Yeah. And so
I can slow dance just fine. I don't really know a waltz, but I was going to say I slowed dance at my wedding, but that's not important anymore.
Right.
But you know, I can do that, but anything, it'll all be in my book. Anything, though, more involved than that,
Well, merengue is the dance that I prescribed for you then.
Oh, dear God. Okay.
It'll be coming up in the rotation probably sometime this summer.
You say so.
Absolutely. I promise.
Good. I have a few months left to mentally talk myself into this.
All you got to be able to do is walk, Will, and I've seen you do that.
All right. It's 8:57. I know we're out of time, but all right, fine, Scott. One question for me.
One question.
And hurry. We're pretty much completely out of time.
Okay.
So go.
How can we increase the sale of hot chocolate in Florida?
Well, look, we're out of time.
That's not fair.
That's the question you're asking me?
You put me on the spot with one question.
Well, you said you were gonna go all James Lipton on me.
That's a James Lipton kind of question, isn't it?
Yeah, well,
it's very deep if you think about it.
It's very deep, but
you have to think about the climate in Florida.
Yeah.
You have to think about what you could do with hot. You could freeze hot chocolate and blend it into, like, Innkeepers makes the hot tuxedo or the frozen tuxedo. That's Raphael's favorite thing.
Yeah. So
I answered my own question.
Yeah,
right?
So, you know, it was a question that didn't need an answer is what I'm thinking about.
How about this one?
All right,
if you were a Microsoft Office program, what would you be?
I don't know. I think the paperclip would be really kind of annoying, but I'm certainly not a spreadsheet. I'm not Excel. I'm not a PowerPoint. God, I hate PowerPoints, by the way. If I ever go to another journalism seminar where a PowerPoint is displayed, it's going to be too soon.
This is a trick question because it should be. We're all about the Google Suite.
Oh.
So, you know.
Word. Probably just Word. There, does that help?
That's wonderful.
There you go. All right. We really are out of time now. Scott Rasso, one of these days, if I can convince the bosses to let me get away with it, I really will let you interview me.
All right. Stevenson and Rasso in the morning.
Oh, my God. I'm going to be so embarrassed. Well, you know, that'll be about me. Well, maybe we'll save that for my last day on the air. But, Scott, thank you for coming in, and thanks for everything you're doing in the community.
You're doing
a lot of amazing things.
Thank you, Will. This was great. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Today's Homeowner is next on WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson. I'm off for a week. I will see you a week from Monday on Galesburg's Evening News. Local news and Today's Homeowner are next after 9 o'clock. Be kind to one another.